Hello and welcome. This is Nancy. I'm reading with you this afternoon from the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette. Today is Thursday, April 12, 2018. We'll begin with front page news. At the top of the page, we have the subheading Champaign Property Taxes. The headline is Coming Tax Bills Will Include Unit 4 Bump. But rate is better than what school districts set as goal. This article is by Deborah Pressey. The first financial sting from the Champaign School District's building improvement plans will be arriving in mailboxes soon. Bills for 2017 property taxes, payable this year, are set to go out April 30th, and they'll give Champaign taxpayers their first look at how much $183.4 million in bond issues approved in 2016 referendums will actually cost them. In simplest terms, expect to pay about an additional 76 cents for every $100 of assessed valuation over last year. That's based on a Unit 4 2017 tax rate of $5.0299 per $100, compared to its 2016 rate of $4.2704 per $100, according to numbers supplied by the county clerk's office. On a $150,000 house with the standard homeowner exemption, the higher Champaign school rate will mean about $334 more in school taxes over last year, or about $28 more a month. If that seems a bit more than expected, remember the school district first projected increases on various price homes based on its 2015 tax rate, the most recent one available, before the referendum, according to district spokeswoman Emily Schmidt. The 2017 Champaign school rate falls below the $5.0487 per $100 of assessed valuation maximum Unit 4 officials set as their goal. Taxpayers largely have interest rates to thank for that, according to Unit 4 Chief Financial and Legal Officer Tom Lockman. The assumption numbers we used were looking at August 2016 interest rates, and ultimately we sold the bonds in November 2017, and those rates had changed, he said. With more favorable interest rates, and the district maintaining its AA credit rating, he said, we were able to secure rates that were lower than what we had assumed at the time that the referendum assumptions were made. The debt is being divided between two bond issues, $110 million in 2017, and the rest coming in 2020, according to Lockman. The annual cost to individual taxpayers is expected to remain about the same for every year it takes to pay off the bonds. It was most responsible for us to lock in borrowing the largest amount of the money that we could at the lowest rate that we could, Lockman said. So what that means is, yes, the full increase is in place this year. The amount of money that is going toward debt service this year will not increase throughout the life of the bonds. Plans also now call for the district to pay less interest on the 2017 bond and for paying off the debt sooner. The last payment on the 2017 bond issue should be made in 2031, rather than over 20 years, Lockman said. Given no changes in interest rates and the equalized assessed value of the district, the 2020 bond issue would be paid off by 2032, he said. The new higher tax rate for Champaign schools closes at least some of the gap between Champaign and Urbana school tax rates. Urbana's 2017 school tax rate, set at $5.9684, is a bit over 4 cents per $100 more than its 2016 rate, and will cost the owner of a $150,000 Urbana home about $19 more than the previous year. The Urbana school rate, traditionally higher than the Champaign school rate, because so much property in the Urbana School District is tax-exempt, is about 94 cents per $100 higher than the Champaign School District's rate, even with the Champaign school bonds factored in. Better news for Urbana taxpayers is they can look forward to a school tax decrease next year, with payments on an Urbana school bond issue nearing its end. It's going to go off after this year, so we'll have a drop, said Urbana School Chief Financial Officer Carol Baker. While she can't predict the exact impact on the school tax rate, Baker said, it will probably be, it will probably be in the neighborhood of a 30-cent decrease next year, assuming about the same equalized assessed value of the district. Also on page one, we have news about retail development. El Toro joining Carl at the Fields. Eatery planning to open this fall. This is by Ben Zeigerman. Green Street Realty announced Wednesday that it has signed Mexican restaurant El Toro as the first retail tenant to join the Carl at the Fields development in Southwest Champaign. That is the first one we're ready to announce, said Chris Saunders, owner of Green Street Realty. Once it opens this fall, the 3,800-square-foot restaurant will be located in one of the two identical retail buildings being developed by Green Street Realty. They're currently under construction across the street from the Carl at the Fields Administrative Building, where 1,200 employees began moving in this February. A Hampton Inn and Suites is also scheduled to open at the site this summer. This will be the 12th El Toro restaurant, according to its website. They expressed some interest and were familiar with their product, Saunders said. Owner Victor Fuentes does a great job. It's a really good fit out there with all the daytime employees in those buildings. Once filled, the Green Street Realty buildings will include a mix of restaurants, office, and just straight retail on the first floor, and 56 apartments on the second and third floors. In addition to what Carl is doing, a lot of people live in Southwest Champaign, and I think it will become a pretty well-traveled exit off Interstate 57, Saunders said. We're looking forward to signing some more lessees. Along with the $300,000 square foot Carl building, three surgery-related buildings from Carl and Christie Clinic are under construction just north of the Green Street Realty development. We're excited to see progress at the Fields, including the addition of El Toro, said Carl's spokeswoman, Jamie Mullen, in a statement. With the ongoing development of Carl Christie Champaign Surgery Center and medical office buildings opening in 2019, we look forward to being part of the positive growth in Southwest Champaign. And finally, on the front page, we have news about a panel discussion today at the U of I. White House Experts, It's a Different Kind of Presidency, by Adalberto Toledo. Dan Baltz, the longtime chief correspondent for The Washington Post, viewed Sean Spicer's first briefing as White House press secretary as an extraordinary moment, the beginning of a new space in American politics. As for Roger Simon, Politico's first chief political columnist never dreamed there would come a day when the commander-in-chief runs the nation by tweet. It's times like these, Simon says, that the vitality of journalism has never been more necessary. The two White House insiders, best-selling authors, and University of Illinois graduates will return to their alma mater today for a panel discussion entitled Disruption, Disinformation, and Democracy, Political Reporting in the Trump Era. The 90-minute open-to-the-public talk is set for 3 p.m. in room 404 of the Illini Union, with U of I professors Tracy Sulkin and Stephanie Kraft serving as moderators. The editor-in-chief of the Daily Illini, the year the U of I turned 100, Baltz's 40 years at the Post span 9 presidencies and have led to 2 New York Times best-selling books about the 2008 and the 2012 campaigns. Simon, a Southside native who got his White House start covering the Monica Lewinsky scandal for the Chicago Tribune, authored the bestseller Showtime, chronicling the 1996 race for president. When they started working in the White House press room, neither figured they would ever be asked the sorts of questions they're sure to get today. The challenges of covering the 45th president are particularly unique. Both say, from the need to monitor at real Donald Trump at all hours of the day, to Trump's frequent references to fake news media. What has become clear to both Baltz and Simon is that the past 14-plus months has changed what it means to be a president. Trump survived things that we would assume a lot of politicians can't survive, Baltz said. He's demonstrated that the public is willing to overlook certain things because they like the things he's doing. For Simon, little that has happened since January 20, 2017 has come as a surprise. Not after the long run-up to Election Day, he says. There was no mystery to Donald Trump. He made it clear that he was a different kind of president, a different kind of person, Simon said. And really, you didn't have to read between the lines too much to realize that he wasn't going to just bend the rules, but ignore the rules. He's indulging in behavior that no other president before him has indulged in. As unique as Trump the president has been to track, both Baltz and Simon say, covering the White House remains much the same as it was during the prior administrations. If you talk to people who cover the White House day to day, behind the curtain, the contentiousness of the daily briefings, the tweets, there's the White House that operates in a predictable way, Baltz said. Press briefings still happen in a room named after another U of I grad, the late James Brady. Reporters still go to work at the White House every day, and most of their questions are still answered, Simon said. One aspect of the job Simon wishes there was less of is sensitive stories, based entirely on anonymous sources, which are more prevalent than ever. But when you've got a person who knows the information that you need, and he or she says, "Oh, I'll talk to you, but off the record," then it's very hard for the reporter to say, "Well, forget it. I'll just wait for my competition to get it," Simon says. Baltz hopes readers pay attention to the information those sources provide, and whether over time the stories turn out to be accurate. He cited one example at his own newspaper, home to 47 Pulitzer Prize awards, and the subject of the recent Oscar-nominated movie about the publication of the top-secret Pentagon papers. The Washington Post had a few stories a few weeks ago that the president was ready to get rid of the National Security Advisor, Baltz said. The White House tried to knock it down with public statements, and yet we knew from our reporting that it was accurate. Less than a week after the Post's report, H.R. McMaster was dismissed as National Security Advisor. That's what we have to ask of our readers, Baltz continued, that they recognize over time the validity of the stories we've reported using people's information. That's the measure. Above all, Baltz and Simon plan to stress the importance of an informed citizenry and of holding institutions accountable during today's talk. As for the insight into the long-term, lasting impact of Trump's tenure, Baltz said, "Get back to him on that one. We won't know to what extent he's changed the political system until we're done and out of the Trump era," he said, "whether that's 2020 or 2024. That's all we have on the front page. We'll move on to some other local news. We have the headline in an Urbana shooting, "Wounded Man Refusing to Work with Investigators." This is by Mary Schenck. An Urbana man is being treated for a gunshot wound to the arm at a local hospital while sheriff's deputies try to figure out where and how he was shot. Champaign County Sheriff's Captain Shane Cook said the victim, 28, is not cooperating with deputies. Cook said what they do know is that about 12:45 p.m., a man who had been shot went to the Casey's in the 2100 block of East University Avenue in Urbana. Urbana police were called there, and as they arrived to speak to him, he jumped in a car. "We met him at Carl," Cook said. Since then, deputies and investigators have been trying to piece together what may have happened to the man, including where he was shot and under what circumstances. Cook stressed that the man's injuries are not life-threatening. And in stories from our local section, we have a story about the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation, and the headline is, "They've taken CU in tow. Reynolds siblings to be honored for generosity to community." This is by Deborah Pressey. They earn their bread and butter towing everything from motorcycles to huge semi-trailer trucks. But it's largely a track record for generosity to the community, bringing the brother-sister team at Reynolds Towing Services honors from the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation this week. Greg Reynolds, the business owner, and Susan Jepson, its chief financial officer, will be recognized by the foundation with this year's Local Business Community Impact Award. The foundation gives out 5 awards each year to celebrate the accomplishments of local high school alums. Reynolds and Jepson, both Urbana High School graduates, will be honored at the foundation's gala set for Saturday at the I Hotel and Conference Center. Reynolds and Jepson were nominated by Mike Lindemann, co-director of the annual Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. Lindemann said he has been impressed by all Reynolds Towing does to serve the community, including helping make the marathon a success. "Our race wouldn't be what it is without them," he said. Reynolds Towing stores the marathon supplies at its headquarters in Urbana, houses the marathon office, and does setup, deliveries, and cleanup along the race course. Together with University Laboratory High School students, the towing business cleans up the entire 26-mile race course after the event ends each year, Lindemann said. "Their part in the marathon is huge," he said. Reynolds Towing began in 1980 with one guy, Greg Reynolds, and one truck. Reynolds' sister joined the business in 1999. These days, Reynolds Towing employs 28, runs a fleet of 67 vehicles, among them a 75-ton rotator truck, and has satellites in Mahomet, Rantoul, and Monticello. "It's just sort of grown," Reynolds said. As two siblings working together in what is a 24/7 operation, Reynolds and Jepson said they get along well. "I run the inside, he runs the outside," Jepson said. "He knows trucks, I know paperwork." Reynolds has steadily outgrown its former locations, moving to its current 6-acre site, the former Premium Brands building, at 1417 West Kenyon Road, Urbana, in 2008. In addition to towing small to large vehicles, the business handles roadside assistance calls and roadside disaster management services. It tows for several local dealerships and for the University of Illinois vehicles, and stands by at U of I athletic events, Jepson said. Reynolds Towing also donates its trucks, including a flatbed that has been equipped with stairs to serve as a portable stage for community events. It lends vehicles to local high schools and others for parade floats and stores floats at its building, she said. Greg Reynolds is one of the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon owners, and the business has been involved in the event from its start, though neither Reynolds nor Jepson are runners. "Boosting business growth have been upgrades in technology and equipment," say the owner and CFO. Jepson said her brother started out largely towing cars, and today the business has equipment that can move a stranded airplane and a semi-trailer truck hanging partially over a bridge. Jepson and Reynolds advise fellow business operators who want to be successful to be willing to put in the time it takes. "One of them always needs to be on duty at around-the-clock business, and the business phones need to be answered on nights, weekends, and holidays." Jepson also advised business owners to take good care of their employees who are out there doing the work, and she urged giving back to local communities. "She and her brother are the kind of go-to people for when Urbana needs anything," said Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation Executive Director Molly Delaney. And it extends beyond Urbana. Our next story is about a Champaign Community Coalition, County's Immigrants of Growing Interest. This story is by Natalie Wickman. At Wednesday's immigration-focused meeting of the city's Community Coalition, Attendees were encouraged to learn more about Champaign County's 1 in 10 foreign-born residents. A preview of a report on the county's immigrant population was presented at the meeting. The full report, due out in May, was created by the University YMCA's New American Welcome Center, in partnership with advocacy groups New American Economy and Welcoming America. Christopher DeFranco, a data analyst on the report, said the statistics were mainly compiled from the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey, issued in 2011 and 2016, and consisting of surveys from 24,000 people throughout the county. Although there were some gaps in the Bureau's information, DeFranco said it's the best source for getting baseline estimates. Among the data that he presented, the top regions of origin for the county's immigrants are East Asia, North America, Europe, Southeast Asia, and Southwest Asia. The fastest-growing regions of origin are Central America, Central Africa, and East Africa. Not including the University of Illinois population, the county has immigrants from 76 countries. Over 80% of the county's immigrants are in Champaign and Urbana. Immigrants make up one in eight Champaign residents and 1 in 5 Urbana residents. Out of all the county's immigrants, 1/3 have become citizens, 1/4 may be eligible to become citizens, and 1/3 may be undocumented, including deferred action for childhood arrivals recipients. 8% of the county's population in 2000 was made up of citizens born elsewhere. That number grew to almost 12% in 2011 and remained around there for the next 5 years. It shows how there haven't been surges in immigration recently, DeFranco said about the data. It gives us a good understanding of how settled this country is. They've been here for 6 years, and it's home. Jaconda Guerra Perez, director of the U of I's La Casa Cultural Latina, also spoke at the meeting. She said she serves approximately 4,500 students on the U of I campus, some of whom may be undocumented or DACA recipients. I recommend that people get informed, Guerrero Perez said. There's a lot of misconception and misunderstanding in terms of the history of immigrants to this country. Although it may be painful for some people to recount that history, Guerrero Perez said it would be worse to erase those stories. Learn before you make a judgment. Talk to people in your community, too, she said. Be uncomfortable. It's okay to be uncomfortable when we talk about these very complex issues. In news from a Champaign County jury trial, we have accused, convicted, and gas station holdup. Man faces up to 30 years in prison for armed robbery. This is by Mary Schenck. An Urbana man faces up to 30 years in prison following his conviction Wednesday for robbing a gas station clerk at Knife Point last year. A Champaign County jury took about 3 hours to convict Deshaun McCullough, 26, of the 200 block of South Grove Street of armed robbery for the March 26, 2017 holdup of the Circle K, 507 West University Avenue, Urbana. McCullough's thumbprint and his DNA on a paring knife found in the middle of the station floor after the holdup, were the state's main pieces of evidence against him. His attorney tried to argue that someone else had used a knife from McCullough's home to rob the clerk. Judge Heidi Ladd set sentencing for May 21st and revoked McCullough's bond since prison is mandated for him. Testimony Tuesday from the college-age clerk who was working alone about 9:50 p.m. on that Sunday was that a man with a mask over the lower portion of his face entered the station. He just came in and jumped over the counter and asked me to empty the register. He had the knife in his hand, the clerk said. After helping himself to the cash in the first register, the robber told her to open the second register, which she did. Again, he grabbed the cash, then he jumped over the counter and runs out of the store. The woman said she could not identify him, but said he had a high-pitched voice, which the jurors could hear on a surveillance video. They also heard the robber thank the clerk as he leaped over the counter to leave. The entire holdup lasted about 35 seconds. The clerk called Urbana police immediately, but they were unable to find the robber that night. It was not until October when the state crime lab matched the latent thumbprint on the knife to McCullough's fingerprints that McCullough was arrested. Although he has no prior convictions, McCullough had been arrested in late June by Urbana police for an unrelated crime, and his fingerprints were taken at the county jail. Once those prints were in the state database, the match was made to the prints from the March gas station robbery. McCullough still has outstanding charges of criminal damage to property, resisting a peace officer, attempted disarming of a peace officer, and aggravated battery to a peace officer in connection with the June 27th arrest. He was free on bond on those charges at the time of his arrest for the armed robbery. In addition to the victim, jurors heard from former Urbana Police Sergeant Matt Rivers, who testified about the recovered paring knife. It was on the floor between the counter and the door, having apparently fallen from the robber's pocket during his flight. The video showed the robber putting the knife in his pocket after threatening the clerk, but before grabbing the cash. A former crime scene technician, Rivers testified that the print he saw on the blade appeared to be recent. He also said he did not try to get fingerprints off the door handle of the station due to the number of people who would have touched it. Urbana Police Detective Doug Pipkins testified that when he interviewed McCullough last fall, he noted that McCullough had a nasally, high-pitched voice. Defense attorneys Ed Pirano and Walter Ding called no witnesses to testify on McCullough's behalf, instead choosing to try to diminish the state's evidence on cross-examination. Assistant State's Attorney Tim Sullivan argued that the jury had plenty of evidence to convict McCullough, even without an identification from the store clerk. He wore a mask, but he couldn't hide his voice, and he left his personal stamp on the evidence, Sullivan said, of the thumbprint and DNA on the knife. Pirano tried in vain to suggest that because the clerk didn't see or hear the knife's drop, there was no proof that it happened during the holdup. He also argued that with the robber jumping over the counter and taking money from the register with bare hands, that police should have been able to lift more latent prints. They did not. Not a single expert can say that print was put on there, the knife, that night, by Deshaun. Not a single person has identified him, Pirano argued, adding that McCullough told police he had no idea how his print got on the knife. In some local news briefs, vote favors U of I formation of limited liability firms. Legislation that would allow the University of Illinois to form limited liability companies with the inventions or technologies of researchers or faculty members has been approved by an Illinois Senate committee. The Senate Higher Education Committee voted 10-0 this week in favor of legislation, Senate Bill 3568, proposed by Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Mahomet. Rose said the measure would give more flexibility to people affiliated with the university who develop new intellectual property. The nice thing about this is that it gives a lot of flexibility to individual researchers at the university and professors at the university because a lot of what already exists, for example, the Illinois Ventures, maybe there are other things out there that aren't on the scale of an Illinois Ventures, but they could go ahead and license that technology, Rose told committee members. It's just another tool in the toolbox for our researchers and professors to make their ideas and take their creativity to market. We'll take a short break now. I'll be back with the second half hour of the News Gazette. Please stay tuned.